The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome. This is Joe Poe Jr. and Mary Helen Deere hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Kumbai. Our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 985 KACO are Kiowas for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, Susan Campbell, Kiowa Citizen, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, Kiowa Citizen. Alvin Deere will give the opening prayer for our show. Alvin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing real good.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you for coming on and giving our opening prayer, and we'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Okay. I want us to remember the Imhula family today as we lost another elder, and our tribe has suffered the loss of quite a few elders the past year, and we all need to keep our people in prayer. So anyway, let us pause. Eternal God, our Heavenly Father, we just pause right now and ask you, God, just to bless us today as we speak about our tribe and pray, God, that you would just guide our thoughts and our words, Lord, that it would be beneficial for our tribal members and others who are listening. We pray blessings upon each and every one who has come today to speak, and just pray blessings upon their life, Lord. Again, we remember the Imhula family who lost their loved one and a respected elder in our tribe, and we're mindful of all those who have lost during this past year, God. We just pray that you would bless us, bless the families who are in mourning. We give you all the praise, and I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Aho. Thanks, Alvin, for your prayer. The next portion of our show is we'll be talking to Jim Ducky NQ, and he is our Kiowa Elder of the Week. So we'll turn this portion of the show over to Mary Helen Deere. Mary Helen, go ahead.
Hello. Are you on the show? On the
Jim, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good to hear your voice. Are all
good? Yeah, thank you.
okay. What we want to do on this elder program is to find out about you and your life and the experiences that you've had. You know, things aren't the same as when we grew up, And so there's lots of stories I know you have about where you lived, how you grew up, school. And then we want to know how all of that impacted your adult life. And then finally finish up with, you know, since kids don't grow up like we did, you know, what words of advice and wisdom would you have for them? So I'll just go ahead and let you talk and let us know about yourself.
My mom and dad, my dad's from, he's from Stecker, Oklahoma. And my mom just north of there, Redstone. My dad's name was Theatrical Dog. And my mom's name was Carl Kamon, a wishing woman, and everybody left him. That's their name. And my mother, she bore 15 kids for my dad. I'm the youngest of everybody. They grew up in the vicinity of what we call Tong Kong. That would be all the Kiowas in Stecker and Broxton, Redstone, Anadarko, and Burden. And when Dad was a real little guy, old man Angu adopted him and Dad's older brother, Charlie. Dad moved to Mountain View with his mom and his dad. So from St. Patrick to Rainy Mountain, where he got his schooling, and mom, she went to St. Patrick's. And from the time we were real small, through mom and dad, how they talked Kiowa constantly. When the folks from around Mountain View would come visit, which was quite often, I asked him about our language. I noticed a different way they talk Kiowa. So we asked them about it, and I think they're the Rattlers. They look like they were Fort Cobb West, Carnegie, Mountain View, Cody Bowl, Holbert, Cordell, Cooperton. That was where all the time they got settled. But anyway, we all started this thing with folks at a real early age when Daddy would make a drum and he'd break it in and taught us boys how to beat the drum and come into a song. So we got early training with that, and we lived out right between Carnegie and Mountain View, but we never went to Mountain View. We always went to Carnegie. And after World War II, I guess, is when all of us were kind of starting to realize who we were, I suppose. But we were always spoken to in Kiowa. And every now and then, mom and dad would talk English, and also spoke it pretty well. They still had their Kiowa accent, I call it. You know, like Kiowas didn't have no V like in Victor. They didn't have a V. They say heaven. We went to heaven, and all kind of words like that. We used to laugh at, but it wasn't them. Just all Kiowa spoke like that, and we were introduced to Peyote and all the people in Mountain View. So my mom and dad were atheists because they never went to none of the churches around there. And my mom and dad were Catholic. So whenever we'd go on a wagon like Friday from Mountain View to Redstone, it'd take about 14 hours on a wagon. And come Sunday, we start back about 4, get home about 6, and have breakfast and go on to school. But we've done that quite often with the wagon and team. And I remember all the visits we had. People that came to our house were pretty nice. They all used to have a lot of fun talking about different things like dancing and going to church and peyote meetings, and taught us stakeholders, relatives, and who we were, who we were close to, and so a lot of them came later when people started to get cars. People became closer after that. And my brothers and sisters that were eight and seven. So anyway, that's just a little part of our family. And Grandpa, his kids got to know him that way. And Dad started singing when he was 11 years old in Spain, in Peyote. And by at that time, he was dancing in Omaha, and his cone in Omaha was James Conant. And whenever it came time, growing up with under my dad, we would have people come talk about Paul Stay. His old man, Kiowa man, his name Paul Stay. Paul Stay means he sings good, or he knows. Well, he's just good at singing. And then Dad's father, James Asa, was the father of Dad's little brother, Spencer Asa. And Daddy was born Jamie, J-M-I-E, Asa. But when him and Uncle Charlie, they all went to Rainy Mountain, that's when we became Andouille. And anyway, Dad started singing Oklahoma, and James Conad loved to dance, but when he saw my dad needed help, he would go out and help Dad. And folks said back then there was only about four or five singers. It's about all the way through the 20s and the 30s. And my dad, they say Uncle Charlie took that peyote button to Crows, and they say Dad took that peyote button to Osage. So through Omaha and drum making, Dad would always seemed to me like he was always called on. People would come to the house, and I used to get real honored when people would bring him tobacco. You know, they put it at his feet, put it in his hand, depending on how the person was. And some of them, you know, they just walk up the door and come in and say, "Hey, Jimmy," you know. Then they'd ask him. But I've seen all of those things. And, you know, Dad sung Omaha from about 1915 to 1959. And he was what we call his singer now at the Indian Fair from 1931 to 59. And he was the first, what we call a powwow trail, which started in 47. There was only about four powwows in Oklahoma, but we would go with some of Dad's buddies, and we would go to powwow somewhere. We always went to Ponca, and come to find out, Dad was the only outside member of the Ponca tribe that was ever taken into that Gibbswater drum. Yeah. And after Dad left, that position would never be filled by anybody. So even to this date, there's no honored outside guest at Gibbswater at Ponca.
Yeah, I remember a lot of those days, you know, because your dad and my grandfather were very good friends. They were clan brothers and very close. What about, we're about to run out of time here, but how about your adult experiences? You joined the Marines and were gone for a while. Tell us about that.
I think growing up, you know, like powwows, I was supposed to go to the University of Tulsa. And then we're on that powwow trail at Ponca, you know, that's kind of late in the season, that powwow. So, you know, real Indian style, me and Kenneth, we went to Tulsa, and Glenn Dobbs and my coach Thompson, they told me I was too late. And anyway, they wanted me to get started, and I had a whole page full of junior colleges to choose from. So I chose Murray at Tishomingo because they were supposed to have a good team. But throughout my life, I think watching football when I was a little guy and then getting interested in it, and my coach didn't like me or Indian Japan, and I've scored a whole bunch of touchdowns back in the day, but he never did put me in for all conference or all area, nothing. But anyway, football, it changed my life. It gave me a lot of confidence. I met a lot of people, and that's I got a degree because of that. And I've always been grateful to all the coaches that had confidence in me, from Murray to Texas Tech to Central. And I left the Red Raiders because the coach came from Louisiana, from Mississippi Southern, excuse me. And had a hard time with one of his coaches, and I just, rather than beat on that guy, I decided I'd better leave. So I went to Central, and that's where I finished out my eligibility. And for some reason, I'll never figure that out. I joined the Marines, and times I thought that was one of the biggest mistakes in my life, but I came back and started to dance again, and since I was an NQ, everybody thought I was a head singer, born to be, and I never even planned on singing, but I danced for a long time, and started to sing, and that's the way I kind of ended up my powwow life. It's not over yet, by no means, but powwow, you know, it gave us opportunities. We've been to all 50 states, and had a long venture in Canada for a long time. And Tulsa Powwow, you know, we're always noted for that, and always noted for Dad being the head singer at Indian Fair, and then his recording with, like you said, with Lynn and Edna, and all the visits we had up there, and people coming to Dad and telling him they bought his recordings. And I remember all them champion dancers used to stop by the tent at the fair or anywhere, and they'd kind of sing a song to Dad. If I'm ever there, you know, sing that song contest. I really like it. So I've seen a lot of that, and we met a million Indians from all over, seemed like everywhere, that was a real honor, and appreciated my dad creating that background for powwows, and I guess teaching us Kiowa when we really didn't know it.
Yeah. Our time is up for this section, and I think I would like to have you back at some point to talk about more of your life's experiences. And I want to thank you for sharing what you did today, and we will talk again.
Thank you for coming on, Mr.
Inkoo. Appreciate it, your time. I'll
have a good one.
Aho.
All
right, that was 92-year-old Jim. Eighty-two-year-old Jim Ducky NQ. Well, now I'm going to get in trouble for that. So our next guest on the show is the former chief financial officer of the Kiowa Tribe of Oklahoma, and we've got Cornell Sankey here in the office, and we are going to let him say what he needs to say. And he brought some documents with him. And Cornell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
We're doing real good. Well, we'll turn the show over to you. Go ahead, Cornell.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Joe, for allowing me some time on your show. I really appreciate it. I'd like to take this time to thank the Kiowa people for allowing me to serve them during 2019. I would also like to thank Alvin Deere for his prayers and recognize how much COVID has cost a lot of us. a lot of our family members, and we're all thinking about them at this time. I was brought on to the Kiowa tribe in the finance department. They were 5 years behind in annual audits and indirect costs. The financial software wasn't being properly utilized. Financial reports came in, and I'd overlook them, and they'd have actual written in pen what the department report was for, and I just felt like, you know, what is going on here? So I looked around and asked around, and I really would like to take time also to recognize the Kiowa financial staff. They're a group of people that I think have long went without any kind of true appreciation for what they do on a daily base, on a yearly base. They've taken scrutiny from both sides of the government, from the legislative side, the executive side. I think they take, you know, criticism from the public, and no one really understands their side of the equation. You know, I've heard it from one of my friends. It's unethical to subjugate your judgment. It's unethical for somebody to force you to do some action while you know it's not right. I think about all these things, and I'm only here just because I want to help the Kiowa people. Your people are like my people. I've seen them come in asking for help. Asking for help's a tough thing. You know, humility is powerful, and it moves. It should move among our leaders like it does those who are asking for help. They come in, they have nothing. They have nowhere to turn, and they turn to the tribe. Tribe has resources, and we try to distribute those resources like gaming net revenues to where we need help to better enhance our tribal citizens' lives. But when something inhibits or makes a barrier for those net revenues to get to our tribal members, to the people who need help the most, and you see certain groups of people getting more attention than others, it's true the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But in leadership, you have to look at all things. Leadership is not a bigger tent. Leadership is more responsibility. And what I've seen go on, it's not just the Kiowa tribe. It's not just my tribe. It's a lot of small tribes, you know. We all get caught up in wanting our tribe to be the best, but ultimately our failures are in the finance area. We've let groups like Finley and Cook come and take over. And like I said, it's not just the Kiowa tribe, it's all tribe. It's not all tribe, but it's more tribes than a lot of people are willing to say. Tribes need help in banking. Cross First, who handles some of your gaming funds, they're aware and they know your constitution like they know the Cheyenne Arapaho constitution. I was the treasurer for the Cheyenne Arapaho tribes, and I've worked with Cross First Bank. They're aware of all contracts and grants that we receive through BIA, IHS, HHS. They know how to handle those funds and that they have an intent. Indian country is small. The same bad actors pop up everywhere. We look to groups like NIGC for help. We look to other independent groups like National Indian Gaming Association for help. But when they too become part of something that we're looking for help and we're just not getting it, I just want to say that I seen the payment come across for Craig Gunwall. That's why I'm here, I guess, for to talk about. But I wanted to get a lot of these other feelings that have been bothering me for some time, and I wanted to get my point across to the Kiowa people and to let them know that you know, this $160,000 that went to Craig Gunwall is just a drop in a bucket on what resources have not reached the tribal member, the Kiowa tribal member. So, Joe, I think I've carried on for a little bit too long.
Well, you know, we've got that time, so you just go right ahead. I know one question that I was going to ask you. I don't really have that many because I know that you've got some bullet points there. But I know at the time when the chairman signed for the KCOA and he appropriated the $6 million out of the casino's bank with the assistance of the general manager of the casino and without the knowledge of the KCOA board, we were wondering how or who was helping him do that. And then we discovered later that his financial advisor, Craig Gunwall, was helping him. And could you tell us a little bit about that $160,000 payment that was requested sent to Mr. Gunwall?
Well, I knew who Mr. Gunwall was. I had a meeting with him on a Friday. I don't remember the exact date. And
it was September the 7th.
September the 7th in Ryland Rebus's office.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So we met there. I didn't know who Craig Gunwall was. We all met with him, Rylan, Matt, Mr. Kamal T, chairman, and treasurer, George Carter. So this Craig Gunwall took the lead on the meeting, and I was just like, I'm not sure what's going on. Who are you? Who do you represent? And he goes into this spiel about, you know, he's hired a CFO, and I again didn't know who he worked for, where he came from, but through several emails back and forth, he gave me his social security number so we could pay his invoice, which I just wanted to, you know, to know who this guy was because I never heard of him. And I included NIGC on some of these emails as well as the Kiowa Casino Operations Authority, because I just knew that he was going to be asking for money. As soon as I found out that the net revenues weren't coming directly to the tribes, you know, I raised concerns. So whenever a lot of money like this $11 million in net revenue was being put into different accounts, I had questions. We share basically the same constitution, the Kiowa tribe and the Cheyenne Arapaho tribe, and we share the same problems. You guys are just now finding out the problems that we've already spent millions of dollars getting over. Our tribe has had ongoing fights with the executive versus legislator, and you know, it costs the tribe millions of dollars. No one wins except these attorneys. So if there was a way that all of our tribes could come together and
learn,
discuss these bad actors,
from,
yeah, because, you know, they're my tribe, they're your tribe, they're everywhere, you know, and like I said, Indian country is small. We should be able to rely upon one each other for Native American information sharing, you know, financial at the most, because we can't properly carry on a stable financial entity like a government with constant administrations changing, learning the job. And I understand somebody wanting to come aboard, win an election, and start conquering what hasn't been conquered. But if you look at Indian country and the way that the federal government treats us, it's not well. We don't do good with the federal government. I've had people from BIA, you know, as a Cheyenne Arapaho lieutenant governor, lie to my face about when we're going to get our Department of Justice money. You know, these guys are not our friends. You know, I understand we have a new Native American and as Secretary of the Department of Interior, and I'm optimistic. I hope and pray that they help us get some of our former lands into trust. But as up to now, it has yet to be proven how we're going to be treated from, you know, going forward with this Biden administration.
So I have a question about what goes on behind the curtain. I know that once the KIC approves the budget for the year, and it says X dollars is coming from the casino net revenues, and so the KCOA and the casino divided that number X divided by 12, and we would send a wire for 1/12 of that money to the tribe. So once the tribe gets it, it goes into some account, which I don't know what it is, but
that was also where the process. What I discovered when I first came on board,
indirect
those funds were automatically being identified as indirect cost.
Oh.
All of your funds look like they're derived from indirect costs, and that's not how indirect cost is derived. Indirect cost comes at the back end of your grants. It's how you fund your indirect cost programs like finance, HR, maintenance, all those things that don't have direct impact on your programs, that you charge your direct services a portion of that so you can carry on your funding.
Shared services.
Yes. So am I correct in my assumption that once the funds came in, if they were moved to another account, it was believed by certain people in the executive branch that those are no longer casino funds and they could be spent?
I just didn't think they understood that they were casino funds.
Well, I mean, it's my understanding and belief that once the casino dollar comes in, no matter what account it's spent ends up in, it's still a casino dollar.
It's still net revenue.
It only can be spent on those five items that the NIGC has stipulated casino funds can be spent for. And if it's not,
unless you have a gaming revenue allocation,
which we don't.
Right.
So, when you saw that money come in, I'd just like you to tell us what violations were happening once the money was put in indirect costs, and then it was just spread out like a shell game going from account to account. That was before you came in. I know you stopped that.
Right, right. Well, it was a question I had for the treasurer. I said, well, everything, all of your reports come in as indirect cost. I said, that can't be the source of funding. So, I really couldn't get any answers from anybody but my staff. And they said, well, this is the way we've always done it. And believe me, they're not the only ones that's kind of a culture. You know, it's always the way we've always done it. We've never questioned it. But without looking at the big picture and understanding how net revenues flow, they should flow directly to the tribe. Net revenues, not 1/12, not anything like that. It's your net revenues go directly to the Department of Treasury, treasurer and you guys, finance department. But that's the way it should flow, directly to the tribe. But the Kiowa tribe wasn't receiving anything but a land usage, if I can remember off the top of my head.
$1.2 million.
Right, but that still leaves on the table net revenues. The tribe as a whole has to be aware of what comes in. Transparency promotes ethical decision-making. If somebody's not receiving information, then the information's skewed. Your tribal people don't know what's going on. You must be transparent with all financial matters. I mean, if you look at it, and I keep going back to banking, you know, that's where the tribes need help. We've gotten in such problems, in such trouble with bad terms, terrible terms. These banks have every out, but we don't. Heck, we can't even get a credit rating. You know, we go to these banks with, you know, our money in hand, and you know, I've had banks take our money and the next day give it right back to us. Harvest Bank. You know, I've been involved where we've had our funds frozen. You know?
That was for like 4 years, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So, if anything, we need banks to help us negotiate which direction we need. We need to reach out to some of these tribes that are successful. Help us. You know, I mean, we shouldn't be afraid to ask for help. I do it all the time. I just don't know how we can get it across to our leaders that we need to be more ethical and think about our youth. Think about how we need to get financially stable. You know, if our tribal members don't know where we are, you know, there's something wrong. We need to know.
We haven't received any information in a long time. And
neither have we. I mean,
I've got one. We're going to run. We probably have about four more minutes, but I've got one pretty important question to you. In 2018, the KIC voted to begin a forensic audit, and it still hasn't begun yet. The legislature passed a law to begin a forensic audit, and the chairman vetoed it. Why would the chairman veto a law to have a forensic audit? Anyway, the legislature tried to override the veto, but the veto vote was scheduled the day that one of the legislators was in dialysis. So it only had a 5-1 vote to override his veto. The sixth person was in dialysis, and everyone knows that she goes to dialysis Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, yet they scheduled that vote when she was in dialysis. So the override of that veto did not occur. So we still haven't had a forensic audit. And I just wanted to see what you believe that we would find if we did have a forensic audit start. What are we going to see when that happens?
Our tribe has been through, the Cheyenne Arapaho tribe have been through a forensic audit, and they're very expensive, and they go through every transaction. And I'm not against a forensic audit. I just don't think that it's a good use of tribal funds when you look at what has happened in the past. All you need to do is ask people, give them a way to be free to say, hey, I want to come forth with this information, some sort of amnesty, or because when these people have been subjugated and they're terrified to say anything, you know, their lives depend on these jobs. Their families' lives depend on these jobs, and you're not going to get a whole lot of people to just resign. You know, they're going to be, they're just scared. There's no other way else I can put it. And what you'll find is basically people will tell you where to look. People will tell you where to go. And you look at your training for a fraud investigation, it's whistleblowers. That's how you find out wrongdoing.
We've already been getting those already.
And those are where you need to focus on. You know, a forensic audit is so expensive. But if you know where the hot spots are, and anybody who can read a financial, you know, I'm not saying everybody can, because, you know, that's not true. But you follow the money, and it'll tell you where to go, and it'll tell you a story. Not a good one, but it'll tell you a story.
I gotcha. Well, Cornell, in closing, do you have any last statement you'd like to say or share with our listeners?
No, I would just like to thank the Kiowa people for giving me this time. I'd like to give a shout-out to my friend Martha Kumsa. I used to eat lunch with her at the Elders Center there at Carnegie campus. And I just want to say that you know, I really feel good here. I feel comfortable with the Kiowa people. You had Alvin Deer earlier. I worked with Alvin as well, and he officiated my mother's funeral. So, and I don't think I've ever had the time to thank him for that. Ducky, I've known him my whole life growing up in El Reno, and he's a fellow Marine. So I just feel comfortable and wished I could do more for the Kiowa people. Thank you.
Well, Cornell, thank you for coming down. And as soon as the show's over, we're going over to Jake's Rib.
All right.
Corn, that was Cornell Sankey, former chief financial officer of the Kiowa Tribe. Next, we're going to move to our legislative update, and we've got Jacob Sotai. So take over. It's your time.
I'd like to thank Cornell for coming on. I am very thankful for his willingness to give us information in terms of the ongoing financial situation of our tribe. Especially, we were very near reaching a decision on the impeachment process, and his part of that was very significant in telling us his concerns about some of the transactions that were occurring, and giving us information about the payment of $160,000 to this individual, where did that money come from, and also his finding of approximately $11 million from the casino that we're not sure where that ended up. But I appreciate his candor in sharing that information during that process. Unfortunately, we're not able to complete that because of the injunction that was filed. And we still have those concerns about our financial situation as is being reviewed currently by the Inspector General. And we hope that there will be information forthcoming that can explain some of these concerns that have been brought to the surface by two of our whistleblowers who came from the finance office. And these individuals are to be commended for their willingness to speak up and address some of the concerns they had with spending issues. And it'll be a very significant process that will relate to other issues that may arise in the inquiry. So we'll wait to see what happens there. In the meantime, I personally would like to extend my sympathy to the Carol Botone Willis family. She was my colleague in Indian education when I first came in Anadarko. And she was a mentor to me as we worked together on many different projects to help our Native students. One of the more significant events that we helped to coordinate was the Metro Indian Youth Powwow that we held in the Oklahoma City area. And that was really a very fun as well as enlightening to our Native students who got a chance to involve themselves in a cultural activity that many times they are overlooked in the regular powwow circles. They were given a chance to show their skills and share their talent. And it was just wonderful that Carol and I were heavily involved with that. Anadarko coming in to work with Edmond Public Schools, Oklahoma City Public Schools, Putnam City Public Schools. And that was always an event that was looked forward to by our students and all of our schools. There are a significant number of students in each of those school districts and Native students, and sometimes got overlooked at, or were in shadows, and this was a way to bring them out. So I'm very thankful that we were able, Carol and I were able to work together on that, as well as other Indian educational coordinators. And then probably more significantly, that in the early 90s, she was a part of a small group of Native people who gathered together at the Wesley Foundation on the University of Oklahoma campus to lay the groundwork and to plan for a Native church that became Norman First American United Methodist Church. She was one of the founding members of that, and it's still going on today, and her vision of how that church should address the concerns and needs of our Native people are being addressed today. Her and her husband Henry played a huge role in it, and so I'm thankful for her dedicated service to our community, and we'll miss her. And I know her grandson is carrying on her legacy. Dane Poobal is a good mentor teacher of the Kiowa language, and I found out at during one of the services he also has a beautiful voice, can sing the Kiowa hymns with the best of them. So she left a legacy in her family, and so I'm thankful for that. But that she's one of the many that have passed on this year. And like you mentioned earlier, John Inhula, he was a colleague from a distance. He too worked in Indian education in the Denver area. And I knew his presence and his work from afar, and thankful for his commitment to our Native students as well. And I know he will be missed by the Inhula family. So, just received word, the legislature just received word that the chairman would like to have a special session on May 12th, I believe, to discuss the application of the payroll protection program that our casino would like to apply for, and we need to approve that in the proper legislative process. So our speaker is communicating with him now as to whether or not that will be a possibility. So that's one that is coming up following our initial May meeting, monthly session. So we'll see what happens with that.
All right, Jacob. That's it. All right. I've got a couple of questions and a couple of topics that I'd like to talk about. One is the upcoming budget election on May 15th. There's been a slide developed, and we'll put that up on Kiowa's for a Better Future and some of the other pages, but it shows a comparison of the proposed chairman's budget to be voted on May 15th that comes into action on July 1st of this year versus the current budget that we're in ending June 31st. Or is it June just after
30th?
30th. So see, yeah. I was trying to create a leap year in June.
No extra day.
No extra day there. So versus the current budget that we're in, and the current budget that we're in is $3.765 million. And the proposed budget is $4.519 million, and the difference is approximately $750,000, and that appears to be mostly in the form of pay raises. Have you seen that sheet, Jacob?
Maybe. I really can't speak to it, but I do know that's one of the reasons why I am telling my constituents to vote no on the budget. Because they are really unnecessary and exorbitant. And not only that, but the elder payment is not included. And we've increased in our budget we hope to present, we've increased the social services amount and also added raised it to a $400 per person per request. So all those significant areas that can help to meet the needs of our Kiowa citizens, and then we've eliminated those budgets. I think our proposal gives a 1% increase on salaries rather than some of them are
20%.
Excessive up to 20%.
Right. I notice here the chairman is proposing a $95,550 salary for him. Vice chairman, $79,040. His secretary, $60,420, and the treasurer, $72,800. And all of these slides, again, are on Kiowa's for a Better Future, and we'll repost that again so everyone can see it. But, Jacob, could you tell us exactly what happens? Okay, so the chairman's budget comes up for May 15th, just like it did last year. The chairman went to the Election Commission and put his budget up. It failed miserably. So what's going to happen when this vote comes up, and if the chairman's budget doesn't fail, tell us the process that's involved or what's going to happen next.
Well, we will present our budget for consideration. The chairman does have an opportunity to veto that budget, and we're hoping to be able to override it. It depends on the rest, all the legislators. I believe we have four solid votes, and I'm not sure about the other three. So it'll be up to their constituents to decide whether or not they support our submission to override that potential veto. And I would urge their constituents to address that issue when the time comes. But we will present our legislative budget during the June session, monthly session, if not this month, if not during the May session. But we will bring ours up. I think it probably will be the June, because we have to wait till the vote is complete on May 15th to determine whether or not ours will be allowed to be considered. And the other element that we may be able to address is the upcoming American, what's it called? RFP or ARP, American Recovery Plan, that's what it is. That's coming in from the Biden administration. And we from looking at the statistics, that we may receive in excess of $50 million. And we hope to appropriate all that as specifically as possible. And so that will have to be included in a budget proposal before it can be expended. So that may be the ace in the hole that the legislature has.
Jacob, were you able to read that email that I sent you about from Harvard and the Native Institute at the University of Arizona?
The study policy group?
Yes.
No, Mary Helen, I haven't, but I think it addresses a lot of the issues that we need to consider when we make plans for spending that money.
And they provide training for that, too.
Right. Technical assistance.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the legislature should avail itself of any opportunity to learn more how to be more efficient in utilizing those funds. Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully you guys can develop your budget before the chairman can develop his plan to spend the $50 million, which I'm sure is great interest to everybody.
Well, I'm sure any plan should follow the federal guidelines. And as I understand there are no individual payments allowed with this Rescue Act funding.
That's what I was anticipating. There would not be. So we need to be very explicit in how we develop that proposal so that there won't be any variance in the executive branches, because we've seen a lot of areas waste, and they still did not meet the requirements of the budget proposal that was approved August 22nd. We had many of our Kiowa citizens who did not receive the initial payment for which they applied.
Hey, Jacob, we're running out of time. We're running out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off. A couple of announcements. The Kiowa War Mothers will be having their annual Mother's Day dance on May 9th at 2 o'clock at Red Buffalo Hall. The Oklahoma City Powwow Club is the co-host. The flyer is posted on the Kiowa pages. Jimmy James Hokeva Wolf will be our Kiowa Elder of the Week. We'd like to note the passing of Jasper Sonkey Jr. He was born in 1933. He passed on April the 18th at 88 years old. We'd like to thank all of our special guests for speaking today and all of the Koigu for tuning into our program on KACO New Country 985. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombay would say, Goombay for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mullman Media management and staff.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.